Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show, Ray Hyman.
Hey, Victor. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you here. Now, Ray, you've been at this game a little while, and I'm excited to have this conversation because you're in a segment of multifamily development that is not necessarily the most popular. But before we do, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
Yeah. So I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. So very much so a Midwesterner from the start. I moved out to New York for college, which is where I met my business partner, Tom Higgins, and we started working together while we were still in school. And we started right away with small multifamily investing. Now, in New York City, it's a different story because 3-4 units might be a $3-4 million acquisition, depending on where you bought it. So it's much, financially looks a lot more like a large syndication, but it really opened our eyes to the opportunity in smaller multifamily properties. They're very much so underinvested in. They are frequently overlooked, especially by larger investors, but they have a lot of very interesting characteristics to them that make them a little bit more recession resilient. There's a ton of demand for those properties because there's a 30% plus discount versus luxury and almost the exact same neighborhood for a lot of those units. And the list sort of goes on. So, you know, eventually we decided, hey, this is a very interesting thing. Can we do this across the US? And so we've launched on that expansion. Right now we're really focused in the Midwest, but the sky's the limit. The vast majority of US MSAs, net of, maybe one or two like Phoenix, have a ton of this slightly older small multifamily stock in it. So there's a, big opportunity there. But after school, I also worked in investment banking. I covered U.S. real estate and REITs at J.P. Morgan. I moved on to Booz & Co., where I sat on their acquisition strategy desk. And finally, I worked at Saverica Capital, which is a Boston-based private equity fund. And my partner worked largely in development roles and construction management roles. And so we've really brought that together to create a large-scale, highly acquisitive real estate acquisition engine, as well as a construction management engine attached to it that allows us to do a lot of value add deals very quickly. And that's really the basis for Terra Capital and what we are focused on today.
The traditional criticism of these smaller units, of course, is that you often, unless you can geographically co-locate these smaller buildings, the management of the buildings is difficult, no different than, let's say, managing a portfolio of single families is challenging as well. So unless you can get that scale where, you've got at least 75 to 100 doors kind of co-located where you can dedicate your own property manager to that unit count, you're always relegated to third-party management. And then you're either getting poor service or poor attention or poor fill in the blank. And that's made a lot of people shy away from that. And certainly the institutional investors have shied away from it. What are your thoughts?
100% agree with it. And in fact, all the way down to the numbers, we think of it as 100 units. Once you get over that threshold in a market, then you have enough scale to actually be able to manage a scattered site portfolio decently well. For us, we do a lot of things that we stole from the single family home aggregator playbook to be able to manage it. So there's significantly more technology associated with our property management. We manage everything in-house, so we don't use third-party managers. They are, in some cases, they don't exist for that property type. When they do, their management fees are very, very high on a percentage basis for anything that's below 20 units. I mean, I've seen as high as 12% be market in some places in the Midwest, which is incredible. So we had to build out that function internally. Now, we had done it already in New York. And so we actually kind of bring a little bit more of that hard elbow management style to the Midwest. And it plays very well there. And we do a lot better on just a net cash flow increase acquisition versus 6 months into operations than a lot of our competitors do anyway. So it's benefited us in a couple of ways, but it is certainly the most difficult Rubik's Cube part of the problem. And at the end of the day, if you don't hire a really good property manager, once you hit that scale, you'll never be able to succeed. It's not the same. So it's a risk, it's a challenge, but it's one that I think we've done a good job of overcoming, but it is associated with aggregating these portfolios. And is what has kept institutions and large groups, to your point, out of the market, which means obviously if you can do it well, then you've got kind of a nice slice of the pie that's, you know, underappreciated.
I've always believed that in order to be successful in business, you have to be differentiated in the way that the marketplace actually sees value in it. So if your competition is brand new amenitized product, just being a couple of $100 cheaper by itself is not necessarily a differentiator, or at least it's not the differentiator you want, because that's just winning the race to the bottom, which nobody wants to win that race. What are you doing to make sure that you are differentiated in the market? Because in a 10 or 12 unit building, that's not going to be an amenitized product.
Definitely not. And the, you know, the interesting thing about small multifamily is that some 80% of multifamily housing units in the US are in buildings that are 50 units and below, which is hard to think about, but it's true that the vast majority of multifamily housing is in these smaller properties, and it's less in the 20 and below, but it's still a significant part of the US multifamily housing stock in that space. So for us, what we really look for in a property is extremely good location. So we're not buying in the B plus neighborhoods in a market, we're buying only in the A markets. So already there's a differentiation in the sense that in a lot of our cities, especially, there isn't a luxury product there. Or if there is, there's only one and it's extremely low supply. So location off the bat. Two, we go for properties and we pay up for properties that have a charm to them, something that fits with the market and is the classic style of wherever that is. So in Pittsburgh is a good example, is 4 to 5 unit properties that are created out of what were formerly mansions for coal and mostly coal folks and steel folks in Pittsburgh. So that is very common in Pittsburgh. There's a lot of that stock. And so we tend to buy a lot of those, and it adds a certain je ne sais quoi, I guess you might say, but really it's a certain authenticity. It's a very different product from luxury. It's not as stale. It's not as sterile as brand new building with only yuppies living in it, whatever you want to, you know, however you want to phrase it, it is unique. And of that 80% of multifamily housing that's in these smaller properties, the vast majority of it's under renovated or not really renovated at all. So if you can offer something that has very near luxury finishes, if not at luxury finishes, which is what we target, especially in our sort of A plus neighborhoods that we're in, then you really have a unique product type. And it's hard to quantify something that is so qualitatively so subjective, but we tend to lease those units in less than a week. So and it's sometimes a sight unseen. So in our markets in the Midwest, that's unheard of. You might see leasing that quickly in, you know, New York or LA or something like that. But we really are bringing something that's unique to market. The property management component of it being a tech-enabled, you know, folks ready to, you know, they're on the line, they have solutions. We use ChatGPT left and right is another benefit for people that for other small multifamily, it's just, you know, it's like some old guy that, you know, maybe it comes by once every 6 months to make sure you're still alive, but otherwise isn't really doing much to manage the property. That's a differentiator too. But obviously they don't know about that when you're just signing the lease.
What you're saying resonates strongly with me, and it mirrors a lot of what we did in Philadelphia, where we aggregated a number of properties together, typically zoned, you know, small multifamily, RM2, RM3. And we would often take an existing structure, demolish the old 1920s construction on the inside, keep the stone facade, and put a new building on the inside. So you keep that old world charm. Even have some exposed brick niches and things like that that you couldn't otherwise do, and create some pretty amazing spaces that are very desirable. Now, in a lot of these older cities, in especially in infill locations, one of the differentiators, I believe, is parking, because many of these buildings were built without parking. What do you do about that?
Yeah, parking is always a challenge. It is very neighborhood dependent, very city dependent. to some degree, we have to rely on what the social norms are for parking. And there's certain neighborhoods, if we want to talk Pittsburgh as an example, Lawrenceville is a highly desirable neighborhood. Parking is extremely rare there. And so if we want to operate there, it's not always an option for us. But where we do have backyard space or any extra curb space, we will go for curb cuts and we'll prioritize that. And so especially in the Midwest, getting approval for small things like that is, it's not easy, but it's much more doable than it is in major large-scale MSAs in the US. And so where we can provide it, we do. Where we can't provide it, we just have to rely on the fact that none of our competitors can provide it either. It's a tough one. And, you know, large-scale new development have solved that problem with ground floor and basement parking and some other semi-creative solutions like that. That is always something that is tough to compete with. But in all those neighborhoods, you know, there is street parking, and folks just, if they know where they're living, they get used to the fact that that's how they'll do it.
Love it. Well, Ray, if folks want to learn more, if they want to connect, what's the best way?
Yeah. So we are on a few different platforms. We have a pretty detailed LinkedIn page where we post a lot of our thought pieces. That's just Terra Capital on LinkedIn. We have a Terra Capital page on Bigger Pockets as well. And we have a website, usaterra.com. Please visit us there and feel free to reach out. Our contact info is on there. We'd love to talk shop real estate wise, whether it's small multifamily, whether it's Midwest, whether it's off-market acquisitions, and keep the conversation going there.
Fantastic. Well, love what you're doing. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect to Ray Hyman at usaterra.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.